Welcome to the Red Phone Zone, issue number 51. A couple issues ago, we decided to make a little format change and not talk about anything except for movies. And in talking only about movies, we decided what we're doing is an open-ended discussion of different movie genres. We've talked very, 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 very many of them. I guess four or five. But tonight what we're talking is we are going to be talking post-Star Wars science fiction films.
Yep.
Which was chosen by our guest. And who are you, guest?
My name is Chris Perrin, and I guess I am a writer for Heroic Journey Publishing, a food blogger, a Twitter, and many other exciting things.
Sounds very exciting.
Yep.
So, but I, you know, I was just all excited about getting moving on this again. I didn't say who I am. I am Aaron.
And I am Ethan.
And let your geek flag fly. Good night, everybody. No, so that's what we're going to do is we are just going to have a fun little open-ended discussion where we give our top 10 favorite of the post-Star Wars sci-fi films. But before we do any of that, we have a segment we like to call Geekly Happenings. It's when we talk about news that's relevant to us geeks. What's the first thing we're going to talk about tonight, Ethan?
Well, Quentin Tarantino's got another movie coming out.
He always has another movie coming out. Which one are we talking about at this point?
His spaghetti western.
Ah, okay. Has it got a title now?
It is titled Django Unchained.
Django Fett Unchained.
That's Django with a D.
Django with a G.
D-J-A-N-G-O.
Django.
Yes, Django Unchained.
Like the programming language?
I guess.
Nice.
Let's see. Apparently, his agencies confirmed that he's turned in his final draft on the Spaghetti Western to the Weinstein Company. The movie will be titled Django Unchained and will be produced by Stacey Scherer and Pilvar Savone.
Michael Madsen will probably be in it.
And Michael Madsen. Well, we don't know that, but we do know that Inglourious Basterds star Christoph Waltz will be coming back, will be in the film.
As the Jew counter,
and
that would be kind of
according
weird.
To what I read, it's a like a bounty hunter story, and Christoph Waltz plays a German bounty hunter who's mentoring somebody else, and they go on a mission to basically save his slave wife or something like that.
Damn!
But you know, it's Quentin Tarantino, so it's bound to be at least.
I don't care if it's a Barney movie. I'm there.
Yes,
I mean I love Quentin Tarantino. He's my favorite director working today.
Yep. There's that. Obviously, we know the Avengers started filming last week. And in an interview, Chris Evans said that in the Avengers, he's got a new Captain America costume.
Yeah, and he says that it's too comfortable.
Uh-huh. Well, he said...
he got more comfortable in the original one, mm-hmm. and then this one, he's all like, I don't know. And,
yep.
But, you know, that just seems to be kind of like the way he was.
Yep. More comics news I got is you've probably heard about this. Superman is planning on renouncing his American citizenship.
I did see that. I think I shared that on Facebook. But truth, justice in the world way or something. Yeah. I don't know.
In Action Comics number 900, in a story called the Incident, written by David Goyer, who, of course, is one of the writers of Blade, and he did worked. On the script and stories for Batman Begins and The Dark Knight, and I think even partially the new one, Dark Knight Rises, right?
Yeah.
You're the expert on that.
Since when?
I know, I got nothing. Superman apparently, when his actions are criticized by a national security advisor, the Man of Steel replies, "I'm tired of having my actions construed as instruments of U.S. policy. Truth, justice, in the American way, it's not enough anymore." He goes on to say that he'll renounce his American citizenship at the United Nations the next day. So he hasn't actually done it yet.
Yeah. I think that's kind of cool. I wonder if it'll actually happen.
Well, and it's one of those things where it's like, okay, I really would think it would be the other way around of some national security guy telling him to stop doing things, you know.
Well, it's like we want our president to quit throwing around our name, like the name sometimes. But yeah, that might make for a better story,
It would be a more interesting story if the U.S. tried to deport him.
That'd be awesome.
You know?
Deport him to Krypton.
Whatever. Well, but it would be an interesting story.
I think it'd be a great story.
Instead of him renouncing his citizenship, I think it's kind of like, okay, Superman's on his high horse all of a sudden, you know. And I think I mentioned this at one point earlier, but George R.R. Martin has officially now announced that the fifth The fifth Game of Thrones book, or the fifth Song of Ice and Fire book, Dance with Dragons, is finally coming out.
How many are there supposed to be?
Seven. This book's, you know, God, 7-8 years late, and it's coming out on July 12th. Officially, it is coming out finally. We are rejoicing. I got, years and years ago, the Weinstein Company, made a announcement that they plan on remaking, The Seven Samurai,
mm-hmm.
you know, a small movie that I enjoy
a little bit,
you know. Apparently now they have a director for it 4 years later.
Mm-hmm.
Scott Mann, is best known for the 2009 action film, The Tournament.
Yep.
Apparently, this new version will replace the samurai with, quote, paramilitary contractors defending a village from would-be invaders.
Okay.
So, yeah. You know, the first, when I saw this, I was upset, and I was like, okay, how many times have they remade Seven Samurai now? Okay, this is kind of stupid. Whatever. I don't know why they're going off on that it's a big remake of Seven Samurai when it's like, okay, so was A Bug's Life to an extent. You
yeah.
know? I mean... So, yeah, whatever. I think Magnificent Seven was the most direct, quote-unquote, remake of it.
I like the Magnificent Seven.
Yes.
I mean, it wasn't the Seven Samurai,
no.
but it was a fun movie.
Apparently, there's also another one, a Snow White reimagining called Snow and the Seven
yeah.
at Walt Disney Pictures.
That I've heard about.
Which I haven't heard anything mm-hmm. about. Is that the one with the... That's not the one with the woodsman and all that stuff. I mean, that's the Red Riding Hood business.
Yeah.
But... I'll save this one for last since we're talking about crazy stuff this time.
Okay.
I just got some brief stuff. Thor obviously was released internationally.
Mm-hmm.
Has made $93 million already.
That's a lot of
internationally.
Money.
Internationally. That's pretty good.
More money than I have.
I'm really excited about Thor coming out this weekend. So
I hope it's good.
It's sitting at 96%.
Is
on,
it?
Rotten Tomatoes, so cool. that bodes well.
Well, you know, it's the Americans that go in and say, "Well, I want to be different."
Yeah,
and did, there's no Americans.
Did you see those Spider-Man set photos that quote unquote reveal the lizard?
Yeah,
weren't those the stupidest things
yeah.
you've ever seen?
I'm yeah, like, that was pretty silly.
The dude in a hood with a face ooh. Mask on. Yeah,
reveals
ooh.
Reveals lizard
uh-huh. reveals entirely.
Uh huh. Yeah. No, I don't know about all that. Sheesh.
Yeah. We got a couple trailers out this week.
Like what?
Well, there's a new trailer for Transformers Dark of the Moon.
Oh, I don't care.
I know you don't care. I'll see it. It looks entertaining.
I haven't seen it. I saw the trailer with the moon,
the teaser. Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. Well, this is a much more, you know, in-depth, quote-unquote in-depth trailer. And, I gotta say, yeah, it looks like the first two. I was entertained by the first two, so that could be a good thing. But the new chick in it, I do not think is that attractive at all. But yeah, got nothing. Also, the Harry Potter and Deathly Hallows Part 2 trailer. You seen that yet?
Yes.
That looks
I
awesome.
Like. I like.
I think the best description I saw was Saving Private Potter.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah. I didn't see that, but I could see that. They're changing the fight between Voldemort
oh, yeah.
and Harry. I'm cool with that. Some
yeah.
people aren't going to be because some
no,
people
God,
aren't
no.
going to be cool with anything. Because you know, if you read the book, the whole fight takes place in the what do you call it? Like the
front steps.
Like
basically,
the, well,
yeah.
they're right inside the door. They're
yeah.
like the main hallway. And this looks like it's you know it's
well,
spans
you know
acres.
They copped out, and I felt sort of robbed of the fight at the end of what was it, the sixth book?
Yeah,
there
wasn't much of a fight though. I mean, there was a
I
fight.
Know, but
they cut off the beginning of it, and
well, the whole death of Dumbledore in the movies was not how it was really in the books. And it was in the books. There was a big fight going on. It was like, hey, okay,
yeah.
I wanted to see that, and
there was
I
a
got
fight
let down.
You didn't get to see it at all in the movie.
Yeah.
I don't. Yeah, I get it. There's gonna be a huge fight. It's gonna be awesome.
So yeah,
you know,
I'm fine
I don't
with that.
Care.
I'm looking for a good payoff on this franchise, and I want to see some you know fireballs being lobbed. And
well, hopefully,
whatnot, so.
I'd like to see it to be like the most epic fight ever made. But I
yeah,
probably
yeah.
won't happen.
No, probably not. And of course, the new Green Lantern trailer.
That I have not seen. I just now saw that it's out.
Mm-hmm. Came out yesterday, I believe.
Mm.
You get to see. A little bit more of Oa. It incorporates some of the stuff we saw in the footage from the footage that was released not too long
the
ago.
The con and, footage, yeah.
Yeah, and it has Kilowog on it and Michael Clark Duncan's voice and all that.
Does it work?
Yeah, looks fine to me.
No, I said, does the voice work?
Yeah, the voice
okay.
looked fine
I
to
could
me.
Almost seem to be a little bit over the top. And I know Kilowog is, you know, over the top in a bucket, but, you know, it might be just a little bit too much.
Yeah. There's a bit more. You do get a glimpse of Amanda Waller.
Oh, cool.
In the trailer.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that last week. That, you know, she was like, well, we were all excited about it, and then you haven't heard nary a word about it since. But, you know, that's cool. I'm going to absolutely check that out after we're done with this, because I didn't know it was out yet. I've just got my internet, and I've been messing with it, trying to get it running for tonight's show.
Yeah. And, of course, the big news that came out today was the Star Wars on Blu-ray specs came out.
I saw that. I like the artwork. Did you see the cover art? It was badass. Yeah. I've been disappointed in the cover art in all the DVDs, but I love the cover art on these.
Now, is the audio commentary on all of them is that new audio commentary?
I don't think there's... It would be a hell of a coincidence if it were, because it'd be all the exact same people.
On the original trilogy, did those discs have audio commentary with George Lucas on them?
Yeah.
They did? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it was just that they were worthless because he couldn't really talk the whole picture because episode 3 wasn't out yet.
Right. Well, hopefully they recorded some new ones.
Yeah, I'm quite excited about that. Looking at that, I'm absolutely going to get the complete trilogy. It's going to rock. I mean, I'm really looking forward to
this. It looks to me like... Like discs 7, 8, and 9 are all the extra features. I think 7 is the extra features from the original set, and then 8 is new extra features for. Looks like all of them are new, really extra features. But there's like deleted, extended, and alternate scenes, supplementary interviews, a fly-through, quote unquote, of the Lucasfilm archives, supplementary interviews. Now, disc 9 is the big new thing. It's got. An 84-minute documentary called Star Warriors, which talks about action figures, apparently. There is the Star Wars spoofs, 91 minutes, which is going to include clips from Family Guy, The Simpsons, How I Met Your Mother, Weird Al Yankovic's music videos. I'm wondering if it's also going to include like troops and stuff like that.
Oh, it should.
Then, of course, there's a 49-minute making of Star Wars from 77. There's a 48-minute making of Empire from 1980, or it's a special effects featurette. Classic Creatures, Return of the Jedi from 83 for 48 minutes. And
Anatomy of the Dewback.
Yeah, Anatomy of a Dewback, although I think that was on the old set.
It was.
And then looks like there's a new one, Star Wars Tech from 2007, a 46-minute documentary.
I saw that on the Discovery Channel, I believe.
Cool. So, yeah, and it's coming out in
September.
It's all new remix of, like, 6.1 DTS and all that.
What is the official release date? I heard at one point it was my birthday, and at one point
not.
It isn't, which is fine.
But I think it's closer to the end of the month now.
My birthday is at the end of the month.
Blah, blah, blah. But, yeah. So Star Wars coming out on DVD, on Blu-ray, I should say.
I just really dig that art, the cover art, especially for the complete saga. I mean, it's pretty.
It is pretty awesome.
I'm trying to find September 16th. Okay, so it's 11 days before my birthday. That's pretty awesome. Do you have anything to say about anything, Chris?
No. I don't know why I was brought on here because I don't really like to talk.
We do like to talk, so we can make up for that.
No, it's weird. I haven't heard much about movie news, but if I can submit something under general geekery, I heard today Mass Effect 3 is going to be really delayed for at least a quarter.
Oh, sad. When was it supposed to come out?
Like the first week in November, which is probably good for everyone who wanted to do NaNoWriMo, I guess.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Whenever Mass Effect 3 comes out, I'm taking a week off work, and I'm just going to beat it. That's my goal.
I love Mass Effect 2, so, I mean, although I haven't, I have no free time, especially during those months, to play anything, and, like, I haven't played the first Dragon Age expansion yet, let alone Dragon Age 2, so.
Right, I gotcha.
I figure I'll just wait till they're all $10 or in a clearance bin or something, you know, when I'm out of law school.
Yeah.
No, I love Mass Effect. I know they're working on a movie based on it too. So,
do you know who's going to be cast in it?
Is that like the Halo movie? Probably never going to happen, but man, it makes geeks excited.
I personally like the April Fool's Bollywood version they put out.
That
the
was
April
pretty
Fool's
awesome.
Trailer that came out last year. That was funny.
That was funny.
But other than that, that's all I got news-wise. I don't know about you guys, but that's sort of a slower news week.
Yeah, that's a good thing. The only other thing that I have would be, and, you know, leave it to me to bring up the bad stuff.
Oh, yes.
But I guess we'll call him Oscar-nominated actor Jackie Cooper has died at the age of 88 years old. He got an Oscar nomination when he was 9 years old. I believe that was for Skippy. But most people are going to know him from stuff like MASH and most notably the Superman movies as Perry White.
Oh, yes.
So, I mean, he's a legend. It's sad to see. I mean, I'm not that particularly familiar with him. I actually saw Skippy because I thought it was weird that a 9-year-old was nominated for an Oscar. And, you know, at one point he was like this huge child star and he broke out of that. He was 88 years old when he passed away, and it's too bad. But, you know, we say it all too often. Shit happens, especially when, you know, with some of these people that are getting up there in age. But, yeah, I guess he'll be missed. I liked him as Perry White. He was pretty good. You have anything to say? No.
No. Sucks to see another. Sucks to see another one go. But you know, I mean, we always have to hit some bad news at some point on the show. But
yeah.
It sucks. I was having trouble placing him because it wasn't near a computer when you texted me who it was.
Should have
said
who is that?
Yeah, but I was driving.
Oh. You're all like. What'd you say? You said something weird. I'm like, what the hell? And you're like, oh.
I said Kane.
You're like, Kane? I'm like, what?
Yes, and I tried to type...
Autocorrect.
I tried to type lame, and autocorrected it to Kane. So I was like, okay,
autocorrect
then.
Turning all my fucks into docs. I hate that shit. But, you know, hey, what are you going to do?
I guess
that's going to bring an end to our geekly happenings. Stay tuned. We're going to be right back with our discussion about the... post-Star Wars sci-fi genre. Stay tuned. Discussion about our geekly happenings and the very little amount of news that happened this week. I guess it's, I don't know, would you rather have lots of news or a little bit of news?
I'm sort of...
Maybe somewhere in between?
Yeah.
Lots of news suck.
Well, you know, so, yes, because then we go on for an hour and a half. And you know, nobody likes that.
No.
Plus, it could be all bad news. And nobody
that's
wants
true. That's true. What was that one week where you had, like, you know, 3 or 4 people die?
Yeah, that
sucked.
That
was kind of depressing news.
Yeah.
But... What does this have to do with our topic tonight?
Well, nothing. Oh, but our topic tonight is going to be post-Star Wars sci-fi. The whole point of this discussion is the sci-fi genre is a interesting and long and old genre that can very distinctly be broken down into two different categories, one being... obviously pre-Star Wars, one being post-Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
We already did discuss pre-Star Wars with... who was
Chris McLaughlin. It was 3 episodes ago.
Yeah, Chris McLaughlin, one of my favorite episodes we've ever done. Mm-hmm. And it was cool. And so what we did is... I don't know if we've made this clear on the podcast of the past, is Ethan and I never pick the topics that we're talking about. Basically, what we do is we leave it up to our guests what they would like to talk about. And so Chris, tonight, he chose... post-Star Wars sci-fi. Is there any particular reason why you chose that genre in particular?
Yeah, there's a couple reasons. First, of all of the movie genres, it's probably the one I know the best. I had no chance to ever be popular as a child because both of my parents were huge Star Wars, Star Trek fans.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I've grown up with sci-fi in the house. And really I was leaning towards Star Wars. And what I found as I've grown, become an adult and really started looking at Star Wars as a genre is I really think that it's possibly the worst thing that ever happened to sci-fi cinema, hands down.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so I wanted to come on and say that and probably get lynched tomorrow, but at least I made a stand.
People would have to listen for
yeah.
that to happen.
That's true. I think
that actually seems to be a pretty general consensus.
Yeah, you know,
I disagree.
Well, Chris had the same thing, you know, Chris McLaughlin had the same thing to say about it. But that's sort of why we broke it up between pre
right.
and post, because Star Wars was a huge game changer. I mean,
yeah.
It came out, it changed science fiction for the next 30 years.
And I agree with that, other than the fact that I don't know why everyone just, they got their damn heads stuck in the idea of, you know, Star Wars is sci-fi. Because there is sci-fi in there.
Sure.
But the things that made it popular, it was the fantasy. It was the action.
Right.
It was that mm-hmm. kind of stuff.
And, yeah, the mythical religions and all that kind of stuff.
Sure. Yeah.
But because it was on spaceships, it got thrown
into...
Yeah,
it was
into,
a big space opera.
I don't know. I see it as people just looking for something to blame. And because, you know, yeah, Star Wars, movies got very, very, very...
Well, I think it...
Expensive and merchandised
that. It entirely comes to the Hollywood machine. It's Star Wars came out, made, you know, dump trucks full of money.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of Hollywood, all those studios went, I want me a piece of that.
Yep.
And so they started churning out high-dollar sci-fi blockbusters. And that's what we got for 30 years. You know, I mean, you look before Star Wars and you looked at more intellectual Star Wars, and it's only recently that we started getting... The more intellectual stuff, in at least in more quantity.
Yeah, I mean,
agreed. And really, what I think happened is the Hollywood machine is really to blame. I mean, Star Wars is the scapegoat. But Hollywood looked at what they thought made Star Wars successful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Star Wars it's a beautiful story, right? I mean, it's the timeless coming of age, you know, hero's journey story that we all hear about. But then it came in this really fancy packaging. And so because of that really fancy packaging, everyone has decided that it was the packaging that made it so popular. Because it was this new and different thing. So that's when you get like Star Trek the Motion Picture,
mm-hmm.
which is just these long establishing shots.
I like Star Trek the Motion Picture, but I don't like Star Trek. Figure that one out. I those long establishing shots of the ship, they were annoying, but I kind of thought the whole story with V'ger was cute. I mean, trust me, I didn't think that this was Citizen Kane or anything, but man, there's some people out there that just think this is just such an offensive movie, and I'm just all like, what the fuck? It's a dumbass little movie.
I don't think it's offensive. I just didn't like it.
Well,
so,
I mean...
I mean, it's just, it's dry and boring, and...
Maybe you're in the... You know, you're not in the you're in the minority here, but man, people hate that movie, and I don't get it.
Oh yeah, I know.
I mean, it's one of those I nothing that movie, but it's almost leaning a little bit more towards positive because I thought the V'ger thing was cute, but you know that's just me, and you know maybe I'm an idiot. I don't care.
Now, you can definitely argue that conceptually it was it had a good concept behind it.
Yeah,
but,
and the establishing shots of the ship. I understand why they happened, but man, did they go overboard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're all like, oh, thank God we finally have money to show what this thing looks like.
Right.
Why don't we just make that what the movie's about? Like, right. No!
But, yeah, but nobody cares, right? I mean, nobody cares about
a couple of those would have been awesome.
Yeah, I mean, you get a few movies, and they've got really cool, like, starship battles. And starship battles are cool no matter how you look at it.
Eh.
But No, starship battles are cool no matter how you look at it. I will die on that hill.
Oh, yeah.
But, But at the same time, again, because everyone got so concerned about the window dressing,
yeah.
you lose the characters, and mm-hmm. characters become wooden. And even if you look at the characters in like Return of the Jedi, I mean, Princess Leia is 1,000 times more wooden, you know, as Jabba's love slave than she was as Princess Leia, the commander-ish, you know, leader. I'm gonna get this out of this by shooting a hole in the grate kind of person.
Sure.
So, and quite frankly, I think the worst casualty of this obsession with window dressing comes with Lucas himself. I mean, you look at the prequel trilogies, and he went through every wooden archetype. Let's just make this pretty, suck the life out of the actors so we can act on a green screen, mm-hmm. you know. And so,
well, Star Wars, it became about the effects, and it became about merchandising, became about the flash and the glitz.
Sure.
Yep. Yep. And so I don't know what would have happened in science fiction cinema if Star Wars hadn't come along. I mean, I kind of feel like Star Wars...
It probably would have still sucked, would be my guess.
It's very possible. And
don't take that as a jab at you or sci-fi.
Sure.
But sci-fi was very disrespected before this point.
Well,
Do not get me wrong. It was disrespected because the studios wouldn't get behind it.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean. And when I say suck, I mean, there's some great pre-Star Wars.
The studios didn't look
sci-fi.
At it as a moneymaker. It's like, you know.
They're like,
we can do this,
maybe if we make this interesting enough, we can stick it on the back half of a dollar drive-in, and maybe we can make some money in a couple of years. And when it came down to it, Star Wars was like one of those, you know, second half of the billing mm-hmm. movies, and it was the most, you know, it made a ton of money, and it made a ton of money profit, and they were trying to figure it out. And the thing that studios need to figure out is you can never recapture that magic, because it has nothing to do with the window dressing. It's got nothing to do with the genre. It's got nothing to do with the actors. I mean, it is literally just a snapshot of the public ideas of that time, and you can never recapture that. And I don't know. I mean, I'm not a studio executive, and I'm an idiot, and I know that.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't understand why they don't get it.
I think fundamentally right there is, you know, studio executives generally are idiots, but
I am I'm an idiot too, and I can figure it out.
But they're idiots with a lot of money.
They're people with a lot of money that are incredibly risk averse.
Yeah.
Because you know, if they're going to spend however many gabillion dollars it takes to shoot a really good science fiction movie, they've got to make that back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they know that they can produce.
It's almost what happened with comic book movies. You know, I mean, in the 90s, comic book movies, they didn't want to dump money into that stuff because they're like, oh, we can do this cheap and it'll do fine. It wasn't until, you know, X-Men and Blade and Spider-Man, all those came out and they spent money on it to make it look good, that they realized, oh, these movies can make money. I mean, and that's exactly what happened with Star Wars. It's, oh, hey, wait, if we make this look good, people will come to see it in droves because they want to see the White House explode 9,000 times.
Lots of establishing shots of that.
Exactly.
I have a feeling that Ethan's going to have a lot of Roland Emmerich on his list. Am I right?
10 of his movies right there.
Oh, dear God.
Even if they're not sci-fi. I put the Patriot on there just because.
I like the Patriot. Hey, wasn't that on my list last week? Not last week. Last week was Ruthaw's, but yeah, week before. But yeah, and you know, this is a man. We could go and you know, because I think that it sounds to me like we have a couple of different, like three different opinions of Star Wars effect on the thing, and it sounds like we could, you know, talk ourselves into a corner and never really get down to our list.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't we just get cracking on our list? And okay. Ethan, why don't you open it up with our number six? Your number six.
Well, my number six is sort of a one thing that really Star Wars did with science fiction is it sort of established that sci-fi and science fiction could easily be a Western in space. And I go back to this one as one of my favorite movies. It's High Noon in Outer Space. It's Outland. In 1981, directed by Peter Hyams, starring Sean Connery and Francis Sternhagen. It's a great movie. It's not a movie I knew anything about until recent, like within the last 10 years when my dad showed it to me, and I was like, wow, that's really good. And it is really High Noon in Outer Space, as with Sean Connery.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, it's one of those that, not a big blockbuster, not, you know, not tons of flashy special effects or anything, but it's a good fun story. It just happens to be set in outer space. And you've seen it. I mean, I know I showed it to you, I think, so.
Yep.
But, I like it. Outland, 1981.
You seen it, Chris?
I have not.
It's a great one.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, when it comes down to it, you know, I mean, I almost, some reason I don't, I've always kind of don't really trust some of those movies that are, you know, Seven Samurai set in the Old West, or, you know, well, High Moon set in space.
Chris, have you seen High Noon?
I love High Noon. High Noon might have been,
but
my...
I'm not a Western fan.
All right. Oh. Well, essentially, Outland, it's Sean Connery plays a marshal on a mining colony on, I want to say Io.
Yes.
And he basically runs afoul of the corporation running the place, and they hire assassins to come get him. But he finds out about it, and no one will help him. He knows these people are coming on the next shuttle, and so he's basically having to prepare for this fight that's coming, and no one will help him. It's a really good movie.
Okay, cool.
That is pretty good.
Check it out.
What is your number six, Chris?
I wrote this down when I was coming up with my top 10, and I'm kicking myself for it.
You can change it if you want.
Avatar is my number six.
Okay.
I liked Avatar. It was a good movie.
I thought it was overrated, but it was good. It was good.
Yeah, I came away with that movie hating white people and being a white person. That was real tough for me. I thought it had a good message. It was a bit ham-fisted in the way that it preached its message of tolerance and eco-responsibility.
Dances with Avatar.
Yeah, dances with blue people.
Yes, exactly. And so
it didn't have Kevin Costner in it, so therefore it was infinitely better.
Oh, yeah, actually, Kevin Costner is the star of, I think, the worst movie ever.
Oh, which one is that?
The Postman.
Oh, God, okay, yes. Not on. I don't think that's on anyone's list. Or is that, that's your number one, right?
My number one! Well, I'd make it number one, but how else would I fit Waterworld on there?
That's true, that's true. Yep. No, I liked Avatar. You know,
I did too.
It's a beautiful movie. It does what science fiction is supposed to do, and I think does well. And that's make social commentary, but does it in a fantastic way. That and you know, it has really, really good special effects and a cool action. I loved it,
and really good acting. It had characters that I liked.
The bad guy.
Yeah. Okay, he was okay.
What was his name? Steve
Quattrich. Oh, the actor?
The actor.
Oh, Stephen something.
Stephen Lang. Something
Stephen
like
Lang.
That.
There you go. Yeah.
He's awesome. Yep. He was great.
Yep.
I was like, don't get me wrong. It wasn't bad acting.
Have you seen The Men Who Stare at Goats?
Yeah, I like that.
He's in that.
Yes. I know. I like that movie.
I saw that after I saw Avatar. It was so strange. Anyway.
Yeah, the only problem I had with really, the security guard force, whatever. I just thought they were too, like, bloodthirsty.
Yeah.
Militant.
The movie was very one-sided. I mean, it was, you know.
I would have enjoyed that movie a lot if they nuked the Na'vi at the end.
The following content has been removed due to a lawsuit filed by the Na'vi people against the Red Phone Zone. Your programming will now continue.
All right, nuking the Na'vi.
Nuking the Na'vi with Aaron and Ethan. Oh, man, I love it. We're changing the name.
Why would you? Apparently, that keeps disconnecting us.
Man, the Na'vi must be like have their fingers in the internet industry.
It's the fiber optic thing. They've got their hair in it or something.
Ba-doom, boom.
Whoa. I liked Avatar.
I did not dislike it. I'm just...
Yeah, and they do kind of beat you over the head with the environmental.
It felt like a Kevin Costner movie.
It felt like a James Cameron movie.
Okay.
yeah, it was just a little too ham-fisted, but I still think it did what science fiction should do.
And it did.
Pretty window dressing, good theme, good idea behind it.
And I've only seen the movie once. And I need to see it again, but when I saw it, I was just kind of watching it because it just became like the highest grossing movie of all time, and I'm like, man, I must be missing out on something. And I didn't quite get it. I mean, I thought that it had really good effects and all that good shit, but other than that, it was pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't that. I just thought that, you know, it was maybe a little bit overhyped, and I also... And, you know, a lot of people will look at it as like, well, it's the highest grossing movie of all time, so that means it's the greatest movie of all time. No, it's because, you know, it was like probably the 3D movie that did the best because the tickets cost so much more.
Right.
Exactly. Yep.
So I guess we're on to my number six at this point. My number six is one that I actually just changed over the course of one of these conversations that we're having right now. I did have it as Alien. And then I realized I've had that movie on my damn list like two or three times. I think I had it under horror and I had it a monster and that kind of stuff. So I said, fuck it. And I changed it to Aliens, the James Cameron film.
Speaking of James Cameron.
Yeah, speaking of James Cameron.
That one just missed my list, but yeah. I do. Aliens is an awesome movie.
I think that Alien is a better film, but I think that Aliens is a more fun film.
Yeah, I agree.
I love it. You know, you got to love Hicks. You got to love Vasquez. And you got to understand that I'm talking about, when did that movie come out?
86.
And we're talking to a guy that doesn't remember names very well. And I remember Hicks. I remember Vasquez. And this is a stupid action movie. Yeah. And I'm remembering these characters' names.
Hudson. Pharaoh.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to love that movie. And it's just a lot of fun. I really, really. Yeah, Bishop. Yeah. You got to love Bishop.
Yeah. the Lance knife Hammerson. Scene. Oh, I did that in class with a pencil after seeing that movie.
Oh, I did too. I can't tell you how many times I stabbed myself in the fingers with pencils because of that damn movie. Yeah. Oh, but man. I thought it was a lot of fun. And I just recently rewatched it again. And I was really surprised at how fake the cargo lifter scene looked these days.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, I grew up and I was like, shit, I want a cargo lifter. And then, you know, seeing this movie, well, they had a puppet. Hell, I could probably have one if I just got some cardboard.
Some paper. There's one guy out there who made one out of 2x4s and was walking around with
it. I really enjoy that movie. And I actually like the way that James Cameron directs a movie. Uh-huh. Some of the movies that he's made hasn't really been my cup of tea.
It's easily one of the best sequels ever. It totally doesn't do the first movie again. It's entirely like, okay, we're not going to do a horror movie. We're going to do a straight out balls to the wall action.
And boy, do they do it well.
Oh, yeah. I love Aliens, but it barely didn't make my list.
Aliens, my number six. So that gets you on to your number five, Ethan.
And my number five, speaking of James Cameron, is 1984 Terminator. Directed by James Cameron, of course, starring Arnold Schwarzenegger and Michael Biehn, Michael Biehn is pretty much in all of his movies up until, T2, and he was edited out of T2.
I liked his scene in T2.
Yeah, and Terminator was sort of the movie that got James Cameron on the map as a writer-director, and, you know, you have the iconic character of the iconic Terminator that's now spawned four movies. They're working on a fifth, It's the movie that really established Arnold Schwarzenegger as, you know, a force in Hollywood. And you have, I mean, it's Terminator. I mean, how many great lines come from that movie? And yes, I picked it because it's the least actiony of all of the Terminator movies. I think it has a bit more of the whole apocalypse and the whole science fiction aspect to it is
you could almost put that under horror or even monster if you really wanted to.
Oh, yeah, but I think it's distinctly science fiction because it involves time travel. It involves post-apocalyptic, you know, stuff and has all that good stuff. So that's my number five, Terminator.
Good one.
My number five is The Fifth Element.
That's a good one. It's the Star Wars of the 90s.
It's the Star Wars of the 90s. Sure in the hell is.
And quite frankly, this one was more of a nostalgic pick for me. Or nostalgic's not quite the right word. But
how old are you?
I went into Fifth Element not expecting anything. Like, I was like, okay, it's science fiction. I'm a nerd. I'm going to go watch it. And, I mean, I thought Chris Rock was hilarious. I thought Bruce Willis did
Chris
a great
Tucker,
job.
Yeah. I enjoy The Fifth Element. It's a fun movie. You know?
I really dug Gary Oldman in that. I thought he was such a weird performance, but it was so cool.
Yeah.
I mean, what was with that weird kind of Creole accent? I mean, it was just a odd ass character.
Gary Oldman.
but boy, was it a good character.
Yeah, I think it was really well cast. I mean, you know, Mila Jovovich, I thought could be, you know, weak or, you know, could be needing to have Bruce Willis, you know, there to when that was what the story called for, and then she could just as easily, you know, kill a bunch of ugly mercenary dudes. I mean, I just thought
great continuity throughout that movie. Continuity.
I do like that movie.
I do too.
It's a fun flick.
I know some people that hate that movie. But, you know, I'm not one of them. I like it. But, yeah, I really enjoyed Gary Oldman in that again. I think that probably anybody could have played Corbin Dallas. And Bruce Willis did fine. But, you know, I think anybody could have played him. And I love the ZF one. Yeah, really.
I don't know about that. I think I thought he added... Like, who else could play Corbin Dallas as well as Bruce Willis?
Anybody, I think.
Oh, come on. You can't. That's a cop-out. Name somebody who could do as well in that role.
Do I need to pull out a then, or can I go all time?
I think a then would be...
When did that movie come out? 99?
Yeah.
98, 99?
Something like that,
Something like that. All right, 99. Guy Pearce could have done it just as well.
Yeah, but he wasn't the big bankable star.
No, but he could have done it just as well. Russell Crowe could have done it just as well.
The bankable star.
In 99, want to make a bet?
Yeah, no, he was. I don't think that.
It probably did.
I don't know. I kind of liked Bruce Willis' sort of gruffness.
I think he was fine, but I think that, you know, maybe he kicked up the budget of the movie a little bit higher than it needed to go.
Well, I think probably he was probably one of the reasons the movie got made.
Maybe.
Because, you know, a lot of stars are, you know, it's like, oh, you've signed Bruce Willis? Okay, we'll give you more money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm also not that big of a Bruce Willis fan anymore.
I know, and I love it. I think it's a great movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun. It's a good sci-fi, you know, it's a good sci-fi epic type of movie. You know, there's a lot going on, some good space opera going on in there. But I dig it.
Good movie. I enjoy it. I have a poster. I have its poster floating around here somewhere. Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly where. My number five.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of James Cameron, speaking of Terminator, I picked Terminator 2. Because it was the one that made me happy when I was a kid.
Sure.
I recognize the originality.
It was the biggest movie of the summer.
The biggest movie of the summer. But I recognize, you know, like the, you know, the originality of the original. I recognize the whole, you know, the rawness of it. The fact that it was made by young, hungry go-getters. But the second one was just so much fun.
Oh, yeah,
I love the T-1000. I love the action scenes in that. That movie made me want to get a motorcycle, for God's sakes. And I'm just not a motorcycle guy. And I don't know. It was just... I had the movie poster when I was a kid. I owned the damn movie on a pirated VHS in the days when VHS tapes were not cheap, and I copied it from the video store when it came out. Loved that movie, and I still love it, and I think it holds up to this day.
I think I watched that movie religiously when we finally got our hands on a copy on VHS. I think I watched it at least once a week like months.
Oh, yeah.
I love that movie. It's a great movie.
Yeah, I mean, I that's why I picked it for my number five. What's your number four, Ethan?
Well, my number four is of course, I can't have a sci-fi list without this being on it. It is the 1987 RoboCop.
Yeah, RoboFuckingCop.
Directed by Paul Verhoeven. Yes, RoboFuckingCop, thank you. Starring Peter Weller and Kurtwood Smith. And this movie is the reason I can't watch that 70s show.
I like it. That's a movie...
I can't do it. I watch
the
it, I'm like,
why that 70s show is that much funnier.
When
to
is
me.
Red going to flip out and kill people? I just can't... Yeah. I just don't know what to do. No, RoboCop, you know, it's a great cyberpunk movie. It has good... It's not... I don't really think of it as a big action film or anything like that. But
cyberpunk.
It,
very 80s.
No, yeah, very 80s.
Very 80s.
A movie they do 80s. Not need to remake, for God's sake.
No.
I love RoboCop, and I've gone on...
Peter Weller in the house.
Yeah, Peter Weller. I love RoboCop. RoboCop is a great movie. I mean, it has this great human message in it, you know, and I just love RoboCop. It's great.
Yeah, I just rewatched that recently, too, and it is a lot of fun. Very surprised at how dated it was, honestly.
Yeah, but it's such
it was the fashion, more than anything.
Yeah, and it's such a quintessential 80s movie, you know, it's like... I just don't see
future.
Well, it's and then you have the yuppies and the suits living. Yeah, I'd buy that for a dollar. And the yuppies living above the 30th floor, never visiting anything else. It's like they have their own bathrooms, and you know, it's one of those things, that this disconnected society thing, and almost sort of Metropolis-esque type of thing going on with things. And they try to they buy the police force because it's a good corporate decision. And
yes,
you know, and of course a corporation privatizing the police force, you think about it now and it's like that's such a bad idea. But I love it. It's a great movie.
My number four then is I Am Legend with Will Smith.
That's a good one. That's a good if just for Will Smith's performance.
Yeah, he did phenomenally. I mean, he was really the only
dog
actor
made me sad.
For half the three quarters of that movie.
Uh-huh.
And he just his presence and the way that he kept me engaged for the entire movie was just fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
So I think just in terms of sheer cinematography, I think it's probably the best on my list.
It's a testament to Will Smith's just talent, really. I mean,
yes.
it's hard
screen
to do a movie.
Presence.
It's hard to do a movie where you're the only guy there, yep. You know, and you have to hold this thing for 2/3 of the movie, and it's just him. And I liked I Am Legend. It was good. As I understand it, the story, the novel is or short story novel, whatever, is much different. And obviously that one's a remake of, I want to say the Omega Man.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean the Omega Man, they all come from a story called
yeah.
I Am Legend.
Right.
So Omega Man and, several others were mm-hmm. all based off that story.
Philip K. Dick, right?
No, Matheson. No.
Yeah.
Richard Matheson.
Yeah. Yep.
But cool. Well, Aaron, what's your number four?
My number four is the 2002 Minority Report, Steven Spielberg film.
Uh-huh.
I was not a fan of Tom Cruise in that movie very much at all.
I'm not a Tom Cruise fan, but I love that movie.
I really enjoy that movie. It's like one of those movies that I believed it.
It is the movie I realized that Max von Sydow wasn't dead in.
Yeah, that's true. I forgot about that. And you realize he wasn't a million years
Whoa,
old.
Whoa, I thought he was like 905
yeah.
years old and dead.
I like Colin Farrell in that, and I don't like him and stuff.
He's
often.
Very subdued yeah. in that. He's
yeah.
Like,
yes.
You know, it's one of those that people go, he was in that? Type
uh-huh.
of thing. So,
yeah, and I'm very aware of him in it because it's just like one of those roles I didn't find him obnoxious in.
Mm-hmm.
It's the movie with probably the most realistic future that I've seen in a movie. There's things about it that aren't realistic, but I could see
that's the thing about a lot of these movies is they present the future a lot and sort of dealing. And usually it's a very fantastic future, in my opinion, very unrealistic. I think mm-hmm. Minority Report does a great job of presenting a future that could plausibly happen.
Yeah, I mean, there's things about it. I don't know, but you know, at the same time, it was believable enough to where I didn't spend uh-huh. my whole time staring at it.
And I'm talking really the technology.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, I really I can see it. I can see that happening in another 30, 40, 50
sure.
years. You know,
yeah,
maybe
I
not
one
the
of those
precogs,
holographic keyboards.
No,
they had.
Yeah.
But you know, like some like the personalized advertising.
Oh yeah,
like the non-lethal weaponry stuff
uh-huh.
like that. I don't think the precogs are going to happen. I doubt we're ever going to get to the point where nobody has cars anymore. But you know, I there were things about it that I found was interesting, and it was obviously directed by the master, Steven Spielberg. And I really enjoyed it. I haven't seen it in a while, and I forgot. And I watched it not wanting to like it. You know, this is one of those big, dumb movies with Tom Cruise's big, dumb face on the poster. And I liked it anyway. I liked it despite that. So, I mean,
it's a good one.
I enjoyed it. So that was my number four.
I had so much trouble swallowing the premise. Like, if I turned my head off and could suspend disbelief around the whole precog thing, I thought it was a great movie. But I thought that I thought the ethical issues that were brought up by that were just, I don't know, kind of
a little silly.
You would never have to deal with, you know, but yeah, I thought as an action movie, you know, with a message, I thought it was good. And yeah, I do see that a lot of that technology is right around the corner.
Sure.
Yep. So, yep, that's my number four. What's your number three, Ethan?
My number three is a movie that I remember vividly watching on video disc. That's right, video disc.
I remember this.
Yes, and I saw one of those at Half Price Bookstore the other day.
With the player or the video disc?
Both.
Oh, wow.
It's like, whoa. Anyway.
Like $3?
They had it setting on their check-in stuff. Someone had brought it in to sell it to them. I didn't know how much, I don't know how much they had it for. Anyway, my number three is 1982, directed by Steven Lisberger, Tron. When I was a kid, I ran around with a Frisbee pretending I was Tron. I loved that movie. I still love it today.
Did you get the Blu-ray yet?
No, not yet. I can't afford it right now.
Steal it. Duh.
There is that. I love Tron. Tron is easily in my all-time favorites right there. I mean, obviously, it's number three on my list here. And Tron is just showcases good, you know, the computer graphics and what computers basically did for film, and was really the first time, you know, they had the computer generated effects going on. And from that point on, you know, it grew from there, and it was that sort of the predecessor to, you know, Terminator 2 and Jurassic Park and Avatar to an extent. You know, I mean, it's some great stuff. And so 1982 Tron.
Neat.
My number three is The Abyss.
Another Jimmy Cameron.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think Cameron's a great director.
Yes.
And The Abyss was another one that I kind of went in not really knowing what I was in for.
Mm-hmm.
And I really liked it. Michael Biehn is in that one as well. Come mm-hmm. think of it. He's the crazy
as a crazy bastard. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
He should have gotten an Oscar for that
movie. I was really impressed with the visuals. I mean, the tidal wave that crashes in and, you know, all that stuff.
And I highly recommend the extended cut, yeah, because it explains a hell of a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the theatrical version is fine, but the extended version just makes so much more sense.
Yes. But it's like...
I don't know if I've ever seen the theatrical version.
3 hours or something like that. I mean, it's really lengthy, but...
Well, I think the biggest thing from the theatrical version of the extended one is when Ed Harris gets down to the NTIs down there, they show the tidal waves, basically... And then they just take the tidal waves away. They don't really explain why.
Mm.
Right. It's not
well,
very...
Well, that doesn't make a whole hell of a lot of sense.
The extended cut does a lot better. But I dig that movie. It's a fun one. I mean, I'm noticing, obviously, James Cameron's showing up a lot on our list.
Yeah, he's a good director, good sci-fi director.
Definitely. He knows how to... I mean, he has the top two highest grossing movies of all time under his belt. So the guy really knows what he's doing. So.
Yeah, I mean, he knows how to make a profitable movie.
All right, Aaron...
My number three is not a James Cameron movie, actually. I could probably find one if I wanted to. But I actually picked for my number three, I picked the 1995 12 Monkeys, directed by Terry Gilliam.
That's a great one. It is a good one.
It was one of those first movies that really made me think.
Yeah.
I mean, and don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm 300 years old or something like that. But, you know, I was just starting to get into movies, and that was one of those ones that, you know, I didn't realize what I had seen until, like, a couple of hours after the end of it. Because, you know, I walk out of that movie thinking, man, what a depressing fucking ending. And then I just, like, wait a minute. You know, okay, everything's all right. Yay! And it's one of those DVDs that I really recommend people picking up, because if Terry Gilliam does one thing right, he does special features on his DVDs so well.
Mm-hmm.
And his documentaries are so great. And that was like one of the better ones I can recall was the 12 Monkeys. And it even had its own title, but I don't remember what it is off the top of my head. But I really enjoyed that movie. And that's a movie that I think that Bruce Willis served very well.
Mm-hmm.
And I do not know that character could have been played...
It's been forever since I saw that.
I've seen it relatively recently. The thing about it is, you know, Bruce Willis, you know, always plays these larger than life, you know, heroic characters that are just unstoppable. And in this movie, he's beleaguered.
Not even talking Bruce Willis. Yes. I mean, that's the movie that I really first really noticed Brad Pitt.
Really?
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, really? You don't remember him from like Cool World or Legends of the Fall or any of that stuff?
Yeah, but I wasn't really interested in any of those. But I saw him in 12 Monkeys. I was like, that guy's really good.
That was his first Oscar nomination, if I remember right.
Nope.
I know. Yeah, I like 12 Monkeys, and I think a lot of people need to check that movie out.
Cool. Well, like you said, I mean, my number two is a movie that I didn't really realize I liked it this much until I started making this list, and it's one of those that sank in for me over some time. And as I said at the start of this whole thing was. A lot of sci-fi movies have up until just very recently they started coming out with movies that really make you think and really sort of work well. The movie I'm talking about is the 2009 District 9, directed by Neil Blomkamp and starring Charlton Copley.
Yeah.
I did finally see that.
I love it. The effects are amazing.
Nowhere near my list, but I enjoyed it.
You know, and it, you know, if you'd asked me, you know, 6 months ago if this would be on my list, I probably would have said no.
Yeah.
But it's one of those I got to thinking about, and like, you know, it has just a really good
That's got a nice really message, doesn't it?
I know. It's like it's one of those movies that you know, it's like you want to turn in your membership card to the human race after. It's like, man, sure. Humans suck.
Yeah, like I don't know. I think about that movie. The first thing I think about is when he's walking around with the camera crew and he's talking about like the babies popping.
Yeah.
It sounds like popcorn. Pop, pop, pop. That's a fucking baby's exploding. And he's laughing about it. And
that's why I think he was robbed of an Oscar nomination.
Yeah.
Because he's just so good in it. I mean, he makes such a...
He's so bad at it.
Well, he makes a character that's such a... Just a asshole. Bastard son of a... And but yet there's development at the end of the movie. He does sort of come around. You're like,
And... Is the sequel in development or not?
I
don't want one.
No, I don't want one either.
I don't want one at all.
I think you should just say Battle Los Angeles is the sequel. Move on.
No, Fifth Element. Fifth Element's the sequel to...
No, Fifth Element is the sequel to Die Hard.
Oh, that's right. No, it's not. It's the prequel to Episode 1.
Well, it's the sequel to Die Hard, prequel to Episode 1.
Right. And
with the Matrix in there, too.
Right. And the Matrix is the sequel to Return of the Jedi.
Right,
gotcha.
Exactly. But District 9, I love it. And it's a movie that actually came out of, they were going to do a Halo movie.
Right.
And it fell through, and that whole team was like, oh, let's do another movie. And they did this.
Yay, let's do this.
This is just a great movie.
So. I rather enjoyed it. It was good. And Charlotte Copley was very likable in the movie.
And that was his first acting gig ever.
Was it his first acting gig ever?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
He did he's an amazing guy. So.
Well, he did real well. I liked it.
Chris, what's your number two?
Number two, The Book of Eli.
I haven't seen it yet.
It was all right.
Oh,
it was all right.
I really enjoyed it. But,
it is Denzel Washington.
I love Denzel Washington.
He's a good actor, but man, I bet he's a asshole in real life.
I've heard that. I've actually heard that. But
part
of it is my faith. Being Christian to really look at they're going after this book that I have some very strong ideas of what that book is, and I won't spill that for anyone who hasn't seen it. But I just I thought there was good messages about that and about fate, and I was blown away by it and completely not expecting that at all.
I haven't seen it yet, so I mean, it's on my list of stuff to watch at some point, but I've never seen it, so I can't really say anything about it.
All right.
And Aaron
the twists in it insulted me, but other than that, it was okay. I mean, I liked
Gary Oldman.
Yeah,
bad guy in
I was gonna say yes. I liked Gary Oldman in it. Like one of the twists I thought was silly, and the other one I thought was dumb. I mean, it was one of those ones that, if you wanted to, you could see it coming. If you didn't, whatever. If you wanted to argue that it's impossible, you'd probably have a lot of ground to stand on. But,
but again, I think it comes back to
faith.
As a Christian, the movie comes down to faith. I totally bought into the twists. So, sure.
Right. But, maybe that's just the difference in us. And it was a movie that was made fine. And there's just certain things about it that I thought was silly. And but, that's me. And that's cool.
Cool.
So my number two, when Ethan was talking about District 9, he said it was a movie that he didn't realize that he liked as much as he did. My number two is one that I didn't realize that I like as much as I do, and I especially didn't realize it when I first saw it. I actually disliked it. 1998's Dark City, directed by Alex Proyas.
That is a good one.
Oh, man, that's a damn good movie.
I haven't seen the director's cut yet.
Very cool. I mean, is that on Blu-ray? Because I should get it if it isn't.
It's generally actually usually on sale for like $10.
Oh, yeah? I just thought that was such a well-made movie, and it was just a really, really original, good sci-fi movie with great special effects that maybe preceded
weird.
Inception. Mm-hmm.
But not so weird that it was off-putting.
No.
Exactly. It was a good weird. It was really engaging.
Because you can have weird just be like, okay, this is like pretty much anything David Lynch does.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, that's just too wacky for me. I'm done. And Terry Gilliam strays into that sometimes. But that one is definitely not too weird to put me off. I like Dark City. And Alex Proyas most of the time kicks out a good movie. Most of the time.
What did you make that isn't good?
Knowing. It was awful.
Was that that?
Oh, was it? Okay.
Was that the movie
Nicolas Cage?
Yeah, that was dumb.
That was awful. Yeah. The only reason I saw it was because it was an Alex Perez movie. But no, I love Dark City.
He also did the...
I haven't watched it in forever.
He also did The Crow.
Mm-hmm. The Crow, yeah, The Crow was his first big one. And then the next one he did was Dark City. He didn't do something for years.
It's probably because he killed his lead actor on the set. I mean, I know he didn't do it,
sure.
And it wasn't his fault, but I'm sure it affected
him. And he did iRobot.
Yeah.
Which isn't a bad movie.
No.
Will Smith's.
Yes, it is.
It's not a bad movie.
Yes, it is.
If you
just like Book of Eli.
If you completely ignore that it's based on the story iRobot and just sort of enjoy for what it is, there you go.
So I guess we're down to your number one?
Yep, my number one. Aaron, do you know what my number one is going to be?
Blade Runner?
Yes,
well, it's my number one also.
1982, directed by Ridley Scott, starring Harrison Ford, Rutger Hauer, Blade Runner.
Motherfucking Blade Runner.
I can't espouse how much I love this movie.
I like all versions of it, even.
Yeah.
I mean, it's don't know that I like...
It's a beautifully shot film. It's a film you can love just watching. It's got a great story. Yep. It's got this timeless, noir aspect to it. It's got so many levels going on, and it's got a good message throughout the movie. It's just all around, from all angles that I can think of, an awesome, wonderful movie.
Great fucking Blu-ray, too.
Oh, yeah.
That's like one of like the best Blu-rays out there. And I don't own it, and I need to,
I've got the regular DVD version of it.
I want that.
So
big one, the briefcase and all that good stuff.
I bought the Blu-ray version of the movie, just so I could have it with there. So, yeah. Oh, I love Blade Runner.
It's just beyond, such a great movie.
Beyond words. And that's another one that, when I first saw it, I didn't like it.
But then I
grew up, I mean,
I think I was 20 the first time I saw it.
I had to have been younger than that
saw
it. And it was one of those things where it's like,
Han Solo. Where's his whip?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But when you're old enough to sort of understand what they're talking about and understand the movie, it's just beautiful. And it's just easily one of the best movies ever right there. So Blade Runner 1982.
Mine too.
Chris?
My number one is Inception.
That's a great one.
And what's funny is I forgot about it. I completely forgot about it. And I loved Inception.
See, I think for me, that one hasn't sunk in yet. It's a lot of these, it took time for me to sit back and look at and appreciate it. It's sort of like find the aging wine. And I think give it a couple of years, I think Inception will probably be on my top 10. I love
it. I just forgot about it. I'm replacing my number 10 with it.
I just, to me, I was really pleasantly surprised with it. I don't know. Maybe I'm just underinformed because they keep saying, I didn't know anything about this. But I think that the worst thing I can do is anticipate and or look forward to a movie because I'm always disappointed. But I sort of went to Inception under peer pressure. Like, everyone's like, you got to see this movie. And I'm like, yeah, whatever.
Well, what I liked about it was, with a lot of these movies, is it's a movie, and I say this a lot, it's a movie that assumes you're not an idiot.
Right.
And I hate movies that just pamper you and really go out of their way to explain all this stuff. And Inception doesn't do that. Inception's just like, accept it, move on. it's like, we're not going to sit here and explain to you this technology that lets them go into the dreams. Who cares? That is not important to the story.
Right.
Moving on.
I thought the way they explained it was beautiful. Like, what was it? Two-sentence explanation. Military needed to train people to shoot, but they didn't want to kill. Okay.
Yeah, two-sentence is too many as far as I'm concerned.
Let's move on, right?
Well, there is this subset of people that have shown up since that movie that came out that like to prove how smart they are by showing how stupid this movie is.
Yeah.
I want to fucking shoot those people in the face. God, I hate that. They're all like, it doesn't make sense because of XYZ. And I have destroyed people. Like, because of them trying to point out that, like, somebody tried to point out to me that the thing with the van going off of the bridge didn't work. And I broke it down mathematically to that motherfucker that it did work out. I just don't like it. You look online, you look Inception, you go to any fucking messaging board, and people are just going to try to say that people try to say that they like that movie because they're smart, because they get it. And it's just a negative bullshit. But I enjoy that movie.
I enjoy the hell out of it.
I own that fucking movie, and I'm happy to own that movie.
I own it on Blu-ray now, too. So.
Well, Shay didn't get it, so that's says something, right?
Yeah.
Well, totally. Hey.
And, you know, Shay's like the smallest potatoes on my list. I understand him. But just these other people out there. I mean, I just don't get that. It was a great movie. It was really well made. And I didn't remember it, honestly. I don't know why. I didn't even think about it when I was making up my list. But I don't care. I replaced something on my list. So, yeah. So now I got Inception on my list.
Yeah, Ethan, I think you're right. I think it was a movie that was unapologetically intelligent. And, yeah. I mean, it goes back to there was a story, there were characters, there was conflict, yeah. And good Lord, was it a pretty movie.
I think one of the big things that I liked about it was it didn't have a huge overall moral to it. I mean, it had some messages here and there, but it told a smart story in a smart way and didn't make you feel like an idiot.
Yes, I think it did a great job of having the theme of, you know, reality and belief and, again, faith, but without like punching you with it every time. Whereas like Leonardo DiCaprio having like a 20-minute monologue about nature of reality, it didn't need it.
And I definitely look at that movie and just count my blessings that that's the guy who's been doing Batman the last two movies and doing the next one. It's like we're so blessed to have a director like that doing Batman.
It sucks that Hitchcock died when we were five.
Right.
But at least we have Christopher Nolan living in the same time making movies that we have him right now.
Yes.
He is that good of a director. And I'll say it right now, I think he's amongst the greatest working directors ever, and right now.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, I love Inception, so I could not agree more.
All right.
I think I picked it as my number one movie of the year. No, I didn't. Toy Story 3 was my number one movie of the year. Mm-hmm. But it was my number two.
Yeah.
My number two. I loved me some Inception. So, why don't we wrap this up? Ethan, break down your top 10.
My top 10 goes, number 10 is E.T. the Extraterrestrial.
Mm-hmm.
Number 9 is Children of Men.
Very good.
Number 8 is Jurassic Park.
You just probably made a friend out of John. He loves some...
Children of Men's good.
It's a very good movie.
Yes.
It's good it's good science fiction, I should say. Number 8 is Jurassic Park. Number 7 is Back to the Future. Number 6 is Outland. Number 5 is Terminator. Number 4, RoboCop. Number 3, Tron. Number 2, District 9. And number 1, Blade Runner.
I like me some Blade Runner.
Mm-hmm. Chris, what's your top 10?
My top 10. I don't know if anybody's ever seen number 10, but I think it was called Cube.
Yeah, I've heard Cube? Of it. I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah.
Cube, yeah, about a bunch of people that are kind of in this. It was kind of like Saw without the psycho bad guy,
sure.
but much more cerebral.
Sure.
Number 9, Blade Runner. Uh-huh. Number 8,
Second,
the
I
Matrix.
Thought you said Braveheart.
No, he
Braveheart,
said
Braveheart 2.0.
No, he said Blade Runner.
Blade Runner.
Bit of an accent, sorry.
It's all right.
Blade Runner, number 9. Number 8's The Matrix. Number 7.
Hey, what? I like The Matrix.
I did.
Did I hear?
You yes, sure
that,
did.
That was Aaron. Hey, I love the first Matrix movie, okay?
It was a
fun, silly little kung fu movie that got really out of hand, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, I love the first one. So.
See, I thought it had a great message.
Kung fu movies kick ass.
And they should have just left it at the first one.
And I agree, and that's where I'm just like, you know, screw it all. But, you know, I'm glad you like it.
The 2 and 3 in that series soil the first one so much that it's hard for me to go back and watch The Matrix, but I still really enjoyed it. Number 7 is Serenity.
I love that one.
I haven't seen it. I haven't watched a Firefly, though, so I'm going to. It's on my Netflix.
And then number 6, Avatar. Number 5, Fifth Element. Number 4, I Am Legend. 3, The Abyss. Number 2, The Book of Eli. And number 1, Inception. So.
All
right. Aaron.
Well, my number 10 that I thought of a long time ago, and I did not just put it on just now, I swear I didn't do it, is Inception. My number 9 is E.T. the Extraterrestrial, the Steven Spielberg film. My number 8 is AI, Artificial Intelligence, the Steven Spielberg
movie. Oh, my God. Are you kidding?
I enjoyed that movie, except for the last part with him wishing and wishing. Yeah. Oh. I liked that movie until that part.
Oh, man.
My number 7 is Close Encounters of the Third Kind by Steven Spielberg.
Oh, another yeah, one, I, good... another one I can't stand.
I enjoy that movie. Number 6 is Aliens. Dumb. Number 5 is T2. My number 4 is Minority Report. My number 3, 12 Monkeys. My number 2 is Dark City. My number 1, most favorite, is Blade Runner.
All right.
So I guess that's going to wrap up our top 6 and our discussion about the sci-fi post-sci-fi movie genre in general. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with our outro section. And don't give me any bullshit that it was a wooden performance, because he's a very good, very charismatic little actor that was able to turn that off in order to play an actor, or rather to play a robot and then grow and grow into that charismatic little child. I liked the idea of the robot hunters. I liked a lot of the visual effects on it. I would have liked to have seen that movie had Kubrick not died. And because I think that there was like a good little marriage in there going on of Spielberg sensibilities and Kubrick sensibilities.
Then there were space aliens.
And then there were space aliens, which is my problem with it.
I can tolerate that movie up until the last hour.
Right.
I liked AI, and motherfucker, I only put it on my number 9. I'm not saying it's the greatest thing ever. And I'm talking to John. I'm not calling you a motherfucker. I'm calling John a motherfucker.
I wish.
Fuck Mad
right
Max.
Right up to the point where he escapes, it's okay. But then, there was
when
that
the
whole,
space aliens
like,
show up, I'm like, oh,
like,
come on.
Tower office thing, like out in the poles, that didn't make any sense because no other time did they talk about environmental disasters.
I liked Jude Law in it a lot.
But Jude Law's awesome.
I thought he should have gotten
Law.
An Oscar nomination for that movie. I liked him that much.
Yeah, and, see, I have what I call the rule of Jude Law, which means if Jude Law's in a movie, I will hate it. And, it just seems to happen that way. Like Repo Man.
We mentioned
the fuck
I didn't see it.
We mentioned Waterworld at some point on here. And
Jude Law and
John
Waterworld.
John just mentioned Mad Max. I'm saying if you want to watch Waterworld. Just watch Road Warrior with an aquarium in front of your TV, and you'll get the same movie, and it will be better.
Yeah, probably.
Because Kevin Costner's not in it.
Waterworld's so much worse than Mad Max. So much worse.
Yes, I know. So you watch Road Warrior with an aquarium, and you get the same movie, but better.
I don't know that I've ever seen Road Warrior.
It's the good Mad Max movie.
I know I've seen the second and the third one.
The second one is Road Warrior.
Wait a minute, what's the first? Mad Max.
Mad Max.
No,
is
no, no,
the
no,
first
no.
One.
Didn't like. I don't think I've seen Mad Max. I've seen Road Warrior and I've seen the Thunderdome one.
Mm-hmm. Thunderdome.
That
terrible.
Was the one with Master Blaster. And, yeah, yeah.
The
yeah.
dude running around in a diaper. Yeah,
yeah. yeah I remember that. I don't know. I just thought that AI was good, except for that.
John, I'm sorry. Beyond Thunderdome is not the shit.
Oh, leave John alone. He likes. Stupid movies sometimes. Apparently so do I, because AI is not that great.
not good.
I don't believe I said it was that great, but you know, hey.
You put it on your top 10.
Motherfucker, I made my list like an hour ago, between breaking my leg in half and moving. But yeah, no, I like AI, and I want to see it again. Maybe I won't like it anymore, but I liked it when I saw it originally. And I don't think I've seen it since it was in the theater. So, you know, maybe I've grown.
Maybe you have.
Maybe I used
to. Yeah, I can't imagine having an alien technology that would bring someone back for a day and then destroying their essence forever.
I would do that.
How could you do that to someone you love?
I'd do it. That'd be great.
Remember, I did dig Minority Report, though.
I liked Minority Report. Although, you know, man, Tom Cruise's big dumb head was all over that movie. I like it when he ate the rotten sandwich and the rotten milk. That was funny.
Uh-huh. And Peter Stormare is always He's in Dylan Dog.
Is he?
Uh-huh. John, have you seen Dylan Dog Dead of Night yet?
Doubt it.
Probably not. And we're going off on a 10-second delay, so... I should probably have just typed that into the chat room. I'm an idiot.
You liked it. Okay.
I enjoyed it. It was fun. It was a hell of a lot better than Scream 4.
Well, duh.
Scream 4 was a steaming pile of crap.
I saw like the Scream 4 review up on the website. I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with Ethan? Why would Ethan go see that movie?
It was a double feature at the drive-in. It was that, and I wanted to see Dylan Dog. The other options we had were like Fast 5, and neither Beth nor I wanted to see that. And the other one's like Medea's whatever. I'm like, no.
are back with our outro section. We just had a fun and
energetic
discussion of post Star Wars sci-fi. Apparently, we have opinions about these, but you know what? I had a good time with Chris. Chris, mm-hmm. don't take my disagreeing with you to mean that you suck or anything. I don't need people to agree with me. I mean, that's got to be my mantra for life. Otherwise, I'm going to live myself very unhappy.
Mm-hmm. But, I'm with you. I think we need to find ourselves a couple pints of good beer and start arguing loudly in a bar about post-Star Wars science fiction.
I think that's just it.
And that's actually plausible because he is in Kansas City.
Oh, so shit. I'm there. I am there. So what's going to... So do you have anything you need to be pimping, Chris?
Yeah, I'm always ready to pimp the role-playing game I wrote called Mecha. It is a game of mecha anime. I designed the system from the ground up to be light and sort of capture the awesomeness, which is speed lines and, you know, mecha doing backflips and, you know, mini missile barrages and all that cool stuff. So I've got a bunch of new material coming out for that between now and August, which is Gen Con. Yay, Gen Con.
Just as long as it's not Palladium, I'm happy.
What, you don't
you
like
know,
Palladium?
You and I need to talk about that at some point because I am running some Palladium at Gen Con. That's yeah, I know.
My condolences.
You know, and then I've always got my food blog Well Done, and my
food
new
blog.
Food site. Yeah, oh yeah.
Neat.
My food website, eventfoodie.com. So I think I can stop pimping myself after all of that, I guess.
You guess?
No, wait, no, mecharpg.com.
MechaRPG.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Tell us more about this food.
I like
this. So,
Chad suddenly woke up.
He's like, food? I know what that is.
Like, food?
No, I've been doing a food blog for about 5 years. It's a recipe and review blog. So I create new recipes for dishes, talk about local food issues. I was invited to a Missouri wine convention and came away with some really interesting thoughts about the state of winemaking in Missouri. So I'll be blogging about that.
Do they make decent wine in Missouri?
They make some decent wine in Missouri, yes. Okay.
They make wine in Missouri.
Well, I'm sure they make wine. Yeah. Neighbors make wine.
Missouri has the oldest wine appellation in the United States. So there's a, what is it? I think it's an 8-acre area in kind of the St. James area that is the first wine appellation in the United States.
Nice.
Blogwelldone.com is my food blog. Eventfoodie.com is the food event site. And then mecharpg.com is where you can find my mecha blog and writings on the game. You can also buy it from drivethroughrpg.com.
Wow, you can buy
it. Only $12.
$12? Oh my God. I don't have $12.
$12. Takes me 2 hours at Taco Bell.
Good stuff. So, what's going on next week, Ethan?
Next week, don't know what the topic is quite yet, but we have scheduled Sean Preston, who is the owner and one of the authors over at Reality Blurs Games. They do a lot of Savage Worlds stuff, and he was one of the guys I asked, and he said, sure, I'll do it. And I haven't gotten a chance to coordinate with him quite yet. So.
Cool. Just let me know, like, soon-ish?
Nah, I'll let you know next Wednesday.
That'd be good. That'd be good. I like not being prepared. It rocks. So, I don't have anything else unless you guys do.
That's all I got.
Well, thank you very much for being on, Chris. But until next week, I am Aaron.
I am Ethan.
Let your geek flag fly.
He's gotta go to the bathroom.
It's right over there. I don't know why I'm mocking Ethan for going to the bathroom.